VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, Katie Weaver tells us about a major advancement in protecting very young babies against RSV. Brian Lynn is here with this week's science report. Finally, we continue our Route 66 journey with a special report on the people along the Mother Road. But first,
American Food and Drug officials recently approved the first RSV vaccine for pregnant women. The drug will inoculate the fetus and provide protection from the dangerous lung disease at birth. RSV stands for respiratory syncytial virus. RSV cases fill hospitals with wheezing babies every fall and winter. Pfizer's newly approved vaccine will mean babies can be protected against RSV at birth. Experts say this will guard against severe RSV infections when babies are most vulnerable, from birth through 6 months. The drug is named Abrysvo. The U.S. National Centers for Disease Control and Prevention must issue guidelines or recommendations for use of Abrysvo during pregnancy. Maternal vaccination is an incredible way to protect the infants, said Dr. Elizabeth Schlaudecker of Cincinnati Children's Hospital in Ohio. Schlaudecker was among the researchers in Pfizer's international study of the vaccine. If shots begin soon, she said, I do think we could see an impact for this RSV season. RSV is a minor sickness for most healthy people, but it can be life-threatening for the very young. It swells babies' airways, making breathing difficult. It can also lead to the disease pneumonia. In the U.S. alone, the disease leads to hospital stays for between 58,000 and 80,000 children under the age of 5 each year. It kills several hundred a year. Last year's RSV season was bad in the U.S. It began sickening young children in the summer, far earlier than usual. Babies are born with an underdeveloped defense system. They depend on their mothers for disease protection in the first few months after birth. Here is how the RSV vaccination treatment will work. A single injection late in pregnancy gives enough time for the mother to develop antibodies. These pass to the fetus and are ready to work at birth. It is the same way pregnant women pass along protection against other infections. Pregnant women have long been urged to get flu and whooping cough vaccines and, more recently, COVID-19 shots. Pfizer's study included nearly 7,400 pregnant women and their babies. Maternal vaccination did not prevent mild RSV infection. However, it proved 82% effective at preventing a severe case during the first 3 months after birth. At age 6 months, it still was proving 69% effective against severe sickness. Vaccine reactions were mostly tiredness and pain at the site of injection. In the study, there was a small difference in early birth, just a few weeks early, between vaccinated moms and those given an inactive shot. Pfizer has said that outcome was due to chance. The FDA said to avoid the possibility of early birth, the vaccination should take place between 32 weeks and 36 weeks of pregnancy. The researchers vaccinated the study patients a few weeks earlier in the process. If enough pregnant women get vaccinated, Pfizer predicts the U.S. could prevent as many as 20,000 infant hospitalizations a year and 320,000 doctor visits. The only other way to guard babies from RSV is to give them lab-made antibodies. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration also recently approved a new drug for all infants younger than 8 months. Called Beyfortus, it is a single-dose treatment given before a baby's first RSV season. Sanofi and AstraZeneca made the drug, which is supposed to be available this fall. Schlaudecker, the Cincinnati Children's Hospital doctor, predicts that doctors will try a combination of the treatments when they become available. I'm Katie Weaver.
Scientists say they have discovered new evidence that cloud activity on Neptune is linked to atmospheric changes on the planet caused by the sun. Researchers say the evidence is based on observations collected by several telescopes over a period of nearly 30 years. Data was collected by the Hubble Space Telescope, operated by the American Space Agency NASA, as well as the W.M. Keck Observatory in Hawaii and the Lick Observatory in California. Astronomers recorded atmospheric changes on Neptune as they examined the cloud data. The researchers found that the changes followed the sun's natural cycle. Each natural cycle, known as the solar cycle, lasts about 11 years. During this cycle, the sun's magnetic field completely flips. This means the sun's north and south magnetic poles change places. They then flip back after another 11 years. Before the flip, a major increase in solar activity happens. This can send powerful collections of solar particles shooting through space. The scientists who examined the telescope data said they found that Neptune appeared brightest in 2002, then dimmed in 2007. The planet became bright again in 2015, but then darkened in 2020 to the dimmest level ever observed. The team said the observations also showed Neptune lost nearly all of its clouds beginning in 2019. Astronomers at the University of California, Berkeley, or UC Berkeley, led the research. They recently reported their findings in a study in the publication Icarus. Imke de Potter is a retired professor of astronomy at UC Berkeley and was the lead writer of the study. She said in a statement she was surprised by how quickly clouds disappeared on Neptune. She noted cloud activity had dropped sharply within a few months. Even 4 years later, the images we took this past June showed the clouds haven't returned to their former levels, said Arandi Chavez. She is a student at Harvard University's Center for Astrophysics who took part in the study while at UC Berkeley. "This is extremely exciting and unexpected," Chavez said. She noted the finding was unusual since Neptune's previous period of low cloud activity was not nearly as dramatic and prolonged. Neptune, about four times wider than Earth, is the eighth and most distant major planet orbiting our Sun, NASA says. It receives sunlight with only about 0.1% intensity of our planet. For this reason, the researchers found it surprising that Neptune would be heavily influenced by solar activity. The planet also receives intense winds that can blow around clouds. The scientists looked at images captured by the different telescopes. They discovered clear patterns between seasonal changes in Neptune's cloud cover and the solar cycle. The team found that during periods when the sun gave off more intense ultraviolet or UV light, more clouds appeared on the planet 2 years later. De Potter said the newly discovered data provides the strongest evidence yet that Neptune's cloud cover correlates with the sun's cycle. He added the findings support the theory that the sun's UV rays, when strong enough, may be triggering a photochemical reaction that produces Neptune's clouds. Photochemical is a term relating to how chemicals are affected by light. The researchers are continuing to follow cloud activity on Neptune. They noted that the latest images taken of the planet in June 2023 showed clouds starting to return. The team says this finding further strengthens their evidence. This is because the scientists see a link between the increasing cloud cover and the release of intense UV light over the past 2 years. The researchers say further study is needed to confirm their latest results. They say the research will be important not only for learning more about Neptune, but can also help scientists gain a better understanding of how similar planets outside our solar system behave. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn joins me now to talk more about his science report. Thanks again for being here, Brian.
Of course, Ashley. Glad to be here.
This week, we learned new findings about the planet Neptune. Researchers found that atmospheric changes on Neptune, seem to be directly related to the sun. Why do scientists consider this finding important?
Yes, so the researchers found that Neptune's cloud cover seemed directly related to the solar cycle, which changes every 11 years, and they were able to examine telescope data that showed this connection. And they said their study explained the recent lack of clouds on Neptune, which helped them learn things about atmospheric conditions on the planet, some of which were not known before.
And the team also noted their findings can perhaps also help with similar knowledge about other planets, right?
Yes, that's correct. The scientists said Neptune in particular is very similar in many ways to many exoplanets. These are distant planets outside our own solar system, and they hope to use further studies of Neptune to gain a better understanding of the behaviors of some of those exoplanets.
Okay, thanks so much for being here, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
In September of 2015, VOA Learning English traveled along the famous Route 66, the 3,900-kilometer-long highway stretches from Chicago, Illinois, to Los Angeles, California. For the next 2 weeks, you will hear our reports from the road. We tell you about the communities, the people, the food, and the special landmarks that make up the highway that's the best. These stories first aired in late 2015.
Stunning landscapes, quirky attractions, historic architecture, and brightly lit motel signs surround Route 66. But it is the people along the way who help shape the character of the Mother Road. VOA Learning English traveled the entire length of Route 66. In each state, in each city, and at each stop, we met people who are connected to the Mother Road. Some of those people have grown up right along the route. Others moved there later in life to open a business. And some, like us, were just passing through. This week, we tell you about some of the characters we met during our travels.
For decades, the Can-O-Tex service station sat abandoned along Main Street in Galena, Kansas. It was one of the many abandoned businesses along the historic U.S. Route 66. When the road was decommissioned in the 1980s, entire communities disappeared. But in 2007, Can-O-Tex's fate changed when four local women purchased it and opened Four Women on the Route. They created a gift shop and tourist center for modern-day Route 66 travelers. Melba Rigg was one of the women. She and the other original owners helped revitalize Galena's section of Route 66. Today, the shop is known as Cars on the Route. The new name plays on the popular 2006 animated film Cars, which featured several stops along Route 66. Melba is better known as Melba the Mouth. Just listen to her speak, and you will understand how she earned this nickname.
And they call me the Mouth because I do have a tendency to talk a little bit faster. I'm sitting down and usually fun panel say point. Actually, do talk this fast. We'll talk a little bit faster. I only had one cup of coffee this morning. Everybody in my family, 6 foot one, 6 foot
at
two,
Cars on the Route, Melba meets tourists from all over the world, and she suggests the travelers visit other shops along the road. Melba calls the people who live along Route 66 one big family.
We want to support one another. We're just like a big old family. Route 66 is a big old family. And you got your troublemakers and you got your crazies, I mean, you know, and you got your sweethearts and you got, yeah. And there's a lot of us out here that we're trying to get the young kids involved in Route 66.
Melba knew all about one member of that Route 66 family, Jeannie Tate. And we just happened to have met Jeannie in a bowling alley the night before.
Jeannie Tate has lived her whole life in Lebanon, Missouri. Route 66 goes right through her small town. Locals know Jeannie as an excellent bowler. She practices at Starlight Lanes, a bowling alley right along the Mother Road. A photograph of Jeannie hangs on the wall. The bowling alley opened back in the 1950s. It sits across the street from the family-run Munger Moss Motel, where Route 66 travelers have been staying since 1946. Jeannie Tate has clear memories of the Mother Road in its heyday.
I'm amazed that we could even travel the road as narrow as it was. And of course now, and the cars back then were so huge. You know, they didn't have these little compact cars. They had these big, long, wide Cadillacs.
She says Route 66 created business and brought travelers to her small town.
Stephanie tends bar at Knucklehead Reds in Elk City, Oklahoma. She tells us that the name is for the owner, who has red hair. Merriam-Webster's dictionary defines knucklehead as a stupid person. But it is also the name of a kind of Harley-Davidson motorcycle engine. And Knucklehead Reds is definitely a biker-friendly bar. So friendly, Stephanie says, that visitors often drive their bikes right through the front door and park them on the dance floor. The walls at Knucklehead Reds are covered with gun rights posters and big photographs of country music stars. Stephanie is a transplant from Southern California. She says she loves Elk City and does not miss the West Coast.
We met another transplant in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Boris was born in Bulgaria and came to the U.S. years ago. He is a colorful character. On the day we met him, he wore a bright striped flannel shirt and blue jeans. But someone had painted pictures on the blue jeans. Atop Boris's head is a white fedora hat with a crisp black brim. Boris is stretched out on the grass in the middle of the city's main square. Artists from around the region come to the square to sell their works. Boris himself is an attraction. People come up and talk to him every few minutes. Boris seems to be holding court. He speaks with a slight accent when he talks, but he comes across as a Santa Fe native. He can talk for hours about his adopted city, its history, and its culture.
Michael Fox has lived in the small town of Oatman, Arizona, for 25 years. He is one of just 129 residents. On most days, tourists greatly outnumber Oatman locals. We notice Fox as soon as we arrive in town. He is sitting on a bench outside of a souvenir shop. Fox is surrounded by wild burros that he is feeding by hand. Large numbers of the animals roam the streets of the town every day. They are among Oatman's tourist attractions. Michael Fox also entertains visitors, but he is a jack of all trades.
Right now, I do pretty much anything. I play music in the hotel for tips. I do gold prospecting out in the mountains. I do wire wrap jewelry and make feathers out of horn and a little bit of this stuff and that.
We stopped at the historic Oatman Hotel later on for lunch. Michael Fox is up on stage.
Rain, wind, weather, we're hell-bent for live. We can knock out by my side.
enjoy his performance, and not just for the music. Fox is also kind of an Oatman historian. He entertains the crowd with stories about the town.
Devin Perkins was among the tourists in Oatman. He is far from his East Coast home of New Hampshire. Perkins was in the middle of traveling across the country on his bike. No, not a Harley. Perkins' bike has no motor. It is just a regular human-powered bicycle. The 26-year-old started his trip in Bar Harbor, Maine, one of the easternmost points in the U.S. Once he got to Chicago, he met up with the Mother Road. Perkins listed Chicago and Flagstaff, Arizona, as his favorite cities along Route 66. But he also said he enjoyed Oatman and its wild boroughs and Old West look. He almost missed out on Oatman entirely. The intense heat and the mountain road that leads to the town concerned him.
I almost didn't take this route because of that, the pass and the heat, but I decided to just, you know, cowboy up, I guess you can call it now around here.
The heat is the toughest part of the ride, the cyclist said, as he took off from Oatman. Sure enough, we found him repairing his tire along the side of the road later that day, in the middle of the Mojave Desert.
A brightly colored sign that reads Midpoint Cafe stands tall above the flat landscape in Adrian, Texas. The cafe is at the geographical midpoint of Route 66. It opened in 1928. During Route 66's heyday, it operated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Today, the friendly cafe serves coffee and food. It has become famous worldwide for its hospitality and its ugly crust pies. Fran Hauser owned Midpoint Cafe from 1990 to 2012. She is old friends with Melba the Mouth. The two share Cars fame. Fran herself was the inspiration for the character Flo in the film. Fran decided to retire in 2012 and sold Midpoint Cafe, but she soon missed meeting people from around the world. So she opened another business right next to the cafe, Sunflower Station. The small shop is a great place to buy gifts and try out some of Fran's baked goods. Fran is back in action, talking with international tourists and sharing her love of Route 66. Fran often tells her visitors to be sure to visit the 66 to Cali shop on the Santa Monica Pier.
Fran Hauser's friend, Dan Rice, is the owner of that Los Angeles business. He opened 66 to Cali in 2009. Rice raises funds and awareness about historic Route 66 to help protect and revive the Mother Road. The businessman has traveled the entire route 29 times. Rice knows many of the business owners and residents along the way. He meets Route 66 travelers every day at his shop. Dan Rice says it is the shared connection among all those people that will help keep Route 66 alive. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. Join us again next week for more about our Route 66 journey. And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.